It's a download here on WGN Radio, the home stretch. I'm coming up at 11, Patty Vasquez, Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez takes over. In studio with me now, chief theater critic over at the Chicago Tribune, Chris Jones. Good to see you, Chris.
Always nice to be
always.
Here.
Always. I love it. I feel like it peps up the show. I get a little energy
it does.
Going
livens it up. The ratings right now, people are tuning
They've popped their popcorn. They're like, quick, Chris is on, quick.
Switching stations.
Lorraine Hansberry, it's her birthday.
It is. What an amazing woman. I'm telling you. I think the great. Let's just start out with the real download on this. I think she is perhaps the greatest writer Chicago ever
really?
Produced. I do. The thing is, she died when she was 34 years old. So she, you know, her output was what you would have done at 34. And but a poet comparable to the very greatest dramatic poets of the late 20th century. Your August Wilson, your Tennessee Williams, right up there with them, Lorraine Hansberry.
Raising the Sun.
Raising in the Sun.
And everyone in theater knows that to be, you know, one of the greatest plays of all time.
Yes.
But do you think she gets outside of that? Does she get the kind of acclaim she deserves?
Well, you know, obviously Denzel Washington did Raisin on Broadway, and there was President Obama and First Lady, and that particular evening I remember thinking, well, there's the full circle for that play, you know, the play that couldn't get done, and now it ends up with the first black president of the United States in the audience, and if only Lorraine Hansberry had lived to see that day, could you just imagine, incomparable day for her. But she wrote this second play, which is at the Goodman right now, called The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window. And it got terrible reviews when it first came out. And it was partly because it's a bit of a messy play. And this was the early 60s, and people were not very used to messy plays on Broadway. Secondly, Lorraine was dying in a hotel room, literally, while they were doing the play. So it never, you know, kind of got the polish that it needed. And thirdly, it was about a bunch of white people who lived in Greenwich Village. And we're sort of, one of them owns a newspaper, one of them's an actress. And the critics were like, why hasn't she written Raisin in the Sun again? You know, what is this strange play? And when you see it now, they missed a masterpiece. I'm telling you.
How often does that come along for you? For you as a theater critic who goes to Broadway and everything you see in Chicago, how often are you like, wow, oh my God, everyone missed this?
So, yeah, I not very often because, you know, in most great plays, you've seen them.
And they continue to produce
them. And I see
them
every 5 seconds. And, you know, I Long Day's Journey Into Night, I saw it with Michael Shannon and Jessica Lange on Broadway. I saw down here at the Court Theater, you know, weeks apart, I'm sitting there again for 4 hours or whatever it was. Probably somebody else will do it very shortly. This play, I'm like, I don't know this play. I read it in grad school, I think, but I really don't know it. And there's this fantastic poetry in it. Did you know the word hipster is in that play in 1964 or so? Hipster. And she goes, one of the characters in the play goes, there are no squares. Everybody is his own hipster.
Wow.
That is deep. See, I look at you, I think.
You think hipster.
I think he is his own hipster. That's what I think. That's what I think. And there's another.
I'm going to quote that. I'm going to use that. I'm my own hipster.
And there's another one where they go, I hope your ass doesn't hurt from sitting on the fence. That's a good one.
Why? Where is it? I mean, is the Goodman just smarter than everybody else in the sense that they're bringing it back? I mean, are they like, hey, we got this. We know this is a masterpiece. I mean, because it takes a little bit of guts to take a play that didn't do well when it first came out, or commercially people don't know about it, and put it on stage.
I don't think they knew what they had, frankly. I think that the director, Anne Kaufman, who's a New York-based director, sort of had, that was her project. She took it to them. And to their credit, they said, okay, you know, we like you. We trust you. And she put on that play. I don't think for a minute they thought that this play is as good as it actually has turned out to be, partly because she's given it a really good production. But it's a sort of a picture of the West Village at a moment when, I guess, it's right before everything, you know, caught fire. And it was still at a time when there were true bohemians in New York, which you go to the West Village now, and it's You know, it's all the one percentery. But back then, of course, it was
really
not.
Cool skinny jeans.
Yeah, really cool. Like,
and, really expensive.
You know, the Magnolia Bakery and all the rest of it. But by then, it really wasn't that way. And it's just this fascinating. And at one point, one of the characters, actually the guy, Sidney Brustein, who's this sort of, he owns a, they used to have, Justin, a thing called Lefty Newspapers back then in print. And he owns one of these. And he says at one point, don't you realize everything's about to catch fire? Everything's about to catch fire. And I'm like, wow, she saw that coming in that, you know, before Martin Luther King. She saw it coming. She was a genius. It's an amazing play.
Lorraine Hansberry.
Check it out, the good people of the Download. Check it out.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got to talk 40th anniversary of Steppenwolf. I'd love to talk about this theater archive. And then also your Sunday stories, both the Obama story and then the one you got coming up. Chris Jones, Chicago Tribune. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN Radio. Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune, chief theater critics with me now. We talked Lorraine Hansberry's birthday, so let's now talk about Steppenwolf's anniversary, 40th year.
40 years.
They're celebrating.
You know what? They've got a new bar. It's like a new bar. You know, everyone's opening the show, Justin. Right, I can never get excited about that, but a new bar?
A new bar.
I
think I've seen more pictures of that new bar. Every time I look, I'm like, oh, Steppenwolf's having another party. That's great.
I had a little tour, from their very handsome director of audience services on Saturday night. I think I called him the house manager briefly. He was very offended. He's like, I'm the director of audience. No, wait, the director of audience experience.
Oh, there you go.
I'm like, excuse me. Anyway, so he gave me, he's a very nice guy, gave me a great tour. It's not a very big, so it's a bar. It's basically just north of where Steppenwolf is. It's in the neck.
It's a different building?
Well, it's attached. But it is yes, indeed, a different building. Okay. It has a little door goes in. It used to be the Ethan Allen Furniture Store.
Oh, yeah, right.
For those of you listeners who've been around a while. And in there is a bar. And one of the little signatures is a little globe from O'Rourke's, which is the bar that used to be.
That was my next question. I was going to say, are they trying to recreate that experience? Because O'Rourke's was the basement bar across the street that everyone, all the actors would go to. Great times in that place.
Right.
And it closed up, and I was like, well, where do they go now? So they're just deciding, you know what we need to invest in? Our own O'Rourke's.
So they've created their own O'Rourke's, that's right.
Wow.
But it's a little cool.
It's a great idea.
You know, it needs a little. O'Rourke's is a, it's not a. O'Rourke's had a bit of personality. This is a, you know, a new, obviously, and you know, there's a lot of food. And frankly, I'm walking around the bar, I'm like, this is not very big, and there's really a few tables, and I think they're going into this whole thing quite cautiously, which you can understand, right? But as I'm walking around the bar, I'm thinking, they might get kind of mobbed here. I mean, a lot of people are going to want to have a drink at Steppenwolf.
Or they want after the show, they don't want to go home. They want to see if the actors are going to come to the bar. That's going to be the pressure on the actors, the big actors, the ensemble members.
Go to the bar, John Malkovich.
You got to go,
Gary Sinise, go to the bar.
Gary Cole, you got to go. That's just what we do. You got to go. We have a bar now. Yeah,
so that's all going to be a whole brave new world at Steppenwolf. Laurie Metcalf coming up she's in the show in about 3 weeks, so maybe she'll be in the bar.
I saw a big picture that was attached to your story with Rahm Emanuel sort of giving a proclamation, and in the picture was Martha Levy, who's the former artistic director and executive director of that esteemed theater, who suffered a stroke probably a year ago,
almost exactly.
How is Martha? I love Martha Levy, and I think the whole theater world wants to know how she's doing.
Well, she, you know, there's nobody more popular among anyone in the creative professions in Chicago than Martha Levy. It was partly because she would always go and see everybody else's work, and that she treated them not as competitors or rivals, but she became a mentor to many, many people. She's not doing so bad. She was at the gala, and I saw her at the Steppenwolf gala on Saturday. She was smiling away. She was getting tributes. She was greeting everybody very warmly. I think, you know, she had a stroke, and I think it's a long road back, as anybody who's been in that situation well knows. But she's doing really well. And I think she's started to get out and about, which was not the case a few weeks or months ago. But now, you know, she's showing up at a few things. And it feels to me like Martha's kind of back, actually. And I think that's the coolest thing.
That's great news.
Because it's,
yeah, she's a wonderful person.
Absolutely wonderful. And you know, I'm just glad she's back. That's all I can say. And I think people should feel good that she's in better health.
Okay, so the 40th anniversary of Steppenwolf, there was the big party on Saturday. Is that it? Yes. Are they going to string this along? Is this going to be like the entire 40th? Every week is the 40th anniversary?
And yet another reminiscence from Terry Kinney and Gary Sinise, Jeff Perry. This is where, you know.
This is Jeff Perry's weekend.
My favorite, you know, my favorite Steppenwolf truth is that if I had a dollar for everybody who has claimed to have been in that Highland Park basement, I'd be a very rich man. I would not have to come on your show.
When I was doing theater in that Highland Park church basement, it's a different one. It was not the same. Like it was just an Episcopalian church that nobody, it was just pretty much babysitting kids during service. That's what you have to do.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
No, so 40 years, it's a great theater. I mean, it's one of the, I think it's indispensable in our city. It's cooler than everywhere else. Let's just be frank. Let's tell it like it is.
Well, I mean,
it's a coolness quotient. It's, you know, it's interesting if you look at the people that support it. You know, and you know, I don't know if you ever go to these gala type things ever, but and I didn't actually go to this one. I stopped in after another review. That's a whole other story. But I stopped in because I saw the tent, and I'm like, well,
yeah, there's a
why
tent.
Why not? There's a tent. So I who never know what stories may present themselves.
I will be back in one moment. I see a tent. I'm Chris Jones. I love tents.
There's a cop on the door. He's like, yo, who are you? And I said, Chris Jones. And he's going, no.
Some publicist runs up. Exactly. Like, oh, Chris is here. Drops their drink.
So, anyway, what I was about to say was if you go to a lot of these very boring events and same people sometimes, and Steppenwolf does have... You know, you can see there's the traders are there at Steppenwolf, the kind of the young, wealthy people of Chicago who are globbing on to the coolness of the brand. And I don't think you really see that quite. You know, I was looking around going, look at that guy. You know, they're all, you know the type, right? And there were a lot of them at the Steppenwolf event. I was like,
A
lot of wide knot ties. Also a lot of sort of those young men with beards.
Yeah, right.
With the big beard.
Big
not
beards.
The cool Justin beard. But the big beard.
Are you a venture capitalist or are you in the Decemberists? I can't tell.
I was in London actually about a few weeks ago with a couple, and I was with a couple old college friends of mine, and I got the train into the city of London, and we had dinner in a restaurant there. And this friend of mine, whose job is he deals in 80s vinyl, very alternative, couldn't be any more left wing. And we're sitting there, and he goes, look at these guys. And you see these guys in suits come by with these really long. He's like, look at these guys.
They put it together.
Put it together. And we had this geezer moment of like, God, the trader with a beard.
Those beards wouldn't work in our time. Someone needs to shave those
beards.
We're
talking big beards. And the suit, it's, you know, and it's like the Wall Street movie with a beard.
With a beard, with a big beard. I love it. Chris Jones, my guest tonight. He's the chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune. Let's take a break. We'll get the news. Let's talk about two things that everybody loves to talk about, Obama and Hamilton. Sound good?
Sounds good, man.
All right. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman, Patty Vasquez coming up at 11 o'clock. Chris Jones. Sticking around. I love it.
Oh, on the down
low. Look at you. Chief theater critic at the Chicago Tribune. All right, let's first talk about this theater archive. I think this is the greatest idea ever. The concept of creating an archive for theater, for plays to live on.
Exactly. So there's one in New York at the New York Public Library, very famous. It's where you go if you're a director and you have no ideas. You go and you're like, how did they do it originally? And you watch it and then you squeak down some notes and you go back to Chicago and you direct the damn thing exactly the same way. That's the cynical view. However, the scholars can say you can go there and you can watch, you know, a play from 1992 exactly as it was seen. And that, but Chicago's never had that. So if you think of all the very famous Chicago productions, your Malkovich, your Billy Peterson.
Are they essentially just cataloged or archived by the theater company?
Yes.
Like, so Steppenwolf has, Second City has a room, Steppenwolf has a room.
There's some money to do it. And I think the idea is that there will be a record, a public record of those productions. Now, many of the theaters archive their own shows, but this will be available theoretically to scholars or anyone who wants to look at what those shows actually
are. There has been, I mean, the library has some theater background stuff.
It does.
I remember I was telling Pete right before the segment, and I can't remember the actor's name, and it's going to kill me. I'm going to wake up tonight and go, John. He had three names. But he died of AIDS in the 80s or 90s. He was a really, really great off-loop performer. And I went to the UIC library system, and I found a play he had done, and I think it was through UIC, and that's how I pulled audio for a story I was working on. But you're right. I mean, it was a needle in a haystack.
It's very
trying
difficult
to find it.
Yeah. And there are some great shows that there's no record of at all. Absolutely no record. Now, you know, a lot of people in theater go, well, it's an ephemeral art. You had to be there. Even if you put a camera in the back, you're not really recording it because it's a sort of bad. They're usually bad. But nonetheless, there's definite value to it. So I see that as a good thing.
Well, okay. Your piece last week was essentially a review of President Obama. The show, President Obama.
The comedian.
I mean, but it really did sort of, you know, it was a thought piece about how funny this president has been.
Very funny.
It's very funny. And we were just talking earlier, we were shooting this around in the show, just about, I mean, there really hasn't been a huge track record of funny presidents. And President Obama kind of breaks the mold.
Absolutely. I mean, George W. Bush, not that funny. Bill Clinton, not really very funny. Nixon, no. First Bush? No. But Obama is genuinely funny. And I think a lot of this has come, obviously, in very late in his second term, where he's letting loose a little bit. He seems to me, and I've been sort of, I was working on analyzing why is he very funny. Now, I mean, firstly, he has very good writers. And the other thing is, you know, this is an age, as you know, of video clips. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that speech, that very funny speech he gave at the Correspondents' Dinner,
right.
Nobody used to watch that.
Right.
Now everybody, that had like 5 billion views on YouTube, right? And there's a lot of stuff in that is really, really funny. You know, this is great. This is any number of things in it. And I think he's got great timing. He's sort of droll. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He's actually a pretty funny comic.
He's really good off the cuff, too. Like, you see him in situations where he's dealing with reporters and, you know, if he has to call somebody out or he makes a mistake,
yes.
He's pretty good at sort of getting that one-liner in. But what I liked about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which I've had friends who've been writing for it,
right.
You know, and it's amazing
right.
how many people. And you only see the clips.
Right.
This, for whatever reason, I was on my couch and it came on live on CNN, and I watched the whole thing. And it was the first time I think from
it was
front
long.
To end.
He did a long, as they say in stand up, he did a long set.
It was
forty-five.
I mean,
minutes.
it was joke after joke after joke.
Right.
Now I will say that 10-20% of that was maybe
yes.
it kind of hit,
right.
And you're like, I don't really care who he's making fun of. So, but it was fun to watch him set up and knock down joke after joke, like as the president, to watch him sort of, you know, in different ways sort of deliver that joke.
Which, you know, made the professional comedian of the night somewhat redundant.
Yeah, right.
It's like, hi, you got to follow the president, who's pretty funny. Good luck. And that didn't go down so well.
It did not.
You know, I mean, it's like, wow, this is really not a good gig anymore.
And I wonder how much we play into that, and like the idea that he's done so much in the social media realm, or this sort of new the ability to see him in cameos. We see him on late night television more than any other president. I mean, he
yes.
does the Jimmy Fallon Slow Jam the News,
right?
Or he does Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, he did. No, he was with Hamilton. He was with Lin-Manuel, rapping with Lin-Manuel Miranda. I mean, he's done. It's clearly somebody on his staff goes, you know, this is how you reach people. You know, I was listening the other day, and they're like, as President Obama said to BuzzFeed the other day. And there was a hilarious Second City sketch from about, this is about a year ago, where they took a serious journalist from a paper like the Tribune, and they said, hey, you're not working for BuzzFeed. And the guy and the journalist would go, oh, I want to write this story about poverty. And they go, okay, we're going to BuzzFeed that. 10 great things about being poor. And the guy would be like, no. And it's a hilarious sketch, hilarious. Just, you know, about BuzzFeed. And then they got presidential interviews.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's that.
They have the last laugh.
I mean, they had a, I think, on one of the excruciating sort of in and out of the White House correspondent special on CNN, they had like a panel. Yes. There's some interesting people on there, but it was just like, it was trying to do like fashion police to the White House correspondents dinner. And one of the guys was like, that was his job. Like part of his job was he was former audience
yes.
coordinator for the White House. But his job was to set up the BuzzFeeds or to, you know, do the 30-second video for, you know, Facebook, whatever it was. But so you could tell, I mean, he's a young guy, had fan,
right.
really crazy socks on. Really. I mean, you could tell he was
They've
creative.
Hired a lot of these people there at the White House, I well, think. So all right. of a sudden, he's everywhere.
So let's talk about your column coming up for Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah, tell us about
it's
it.
It's about Hamilton, because you know what? Every time I write about Hamilton, do you know how many people click on those columns? Do you any idea? The,
really?
Do you any so idea just, the multiples?
They're Hamilton crazy for any it kind is, of Hamilton media.
I like to say it is the Donald Trump of arts journalism, Justin. You just write about Hamilton and you are home free. Home free.
What are you writing about?
Well, I got to think of another angle every time, haven't you? Every time. Well, this one, it is actually a fascinating story. So this one, Hamilton, of course, as you well know, is coming to Chicago in September for about 18 months is what they're thinking. And then it's going to go to Washington, where, of course, all the political class can't wait for it to arrive.
Right.
So the Kennedy Center doesn't quite know when it's going to arrive because they don't know how many tickets they're going to sell in Chicago. So they've actually said to people, we want you to buy 2 years' worth of theater tickets to get your Hamilton tickets.
What?
So they're going to buy this season, like 10 shows, and then the next season, like another 10.
So they're
10.
Bundling it almost
bundling
like a, subscri- like a subscription
this.
Series.
It's a little bit like Comcast, where you want your one sports channel, and they're like, you've got to buy 297 channels. And you say, can I just not? And they're like, no.
I just want ESPN
Just
Classic.
ESPN. No, you can't do that. You've got to buy all 300.
That's unprecedented. I mean,
oh, yes, indeed. Unprecedented.
How are people responding to it? I mean, it's too early in the game, but will subscribers go for that kind of thing?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating question. I mean, the thing is that the single tickets for Hamilton run to such ridiculous prices. Your $1,000, your $1,200. You can buy entire seasons for less than that.
Oh, yeah.
So the smart dude is like, well, I can give the rest of them away, or I can just not show. Right.
Or I was going to go to some of them anyway.
Yeah,
right?
maybe. Unlikely, but maybe.
And the theaters, is the theater getting wise to that? Would they jack up their 2 year season?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I think you know it is so interesting in show business is that you know in most fields people compete. These are shows with different producers who are all benefiting from the success of Hamilton. It's sort of fascinating. I mean, if you're in sort of economic theory, which I love the economics of show business, and it's like that thing is going to make billions of dollars. And what sort of fascinates me, and this was occurring to me as I was writing this piece, actually, what fascinates me is that most of the entertainment that we watch is controlled by three or four very large corporations, mm-hmm. not Hamilton. Here you have the most successful, I think, probably the most profitably successful entertainment enterprise of the recent moment. And it's one guy, a couple of guys, really, a few investors, okay, but not a corporation, not a public company.
That's interesting.
So it's very interesting, you know, and it's like it's bigger than anything
right.
that
it's
those
not
guys.
Warner Brothers, it's not.
No,
yeah,
not
it's
Disney.
Not Viacom,
they
right.
can't get it. Yeah, they must
Do they good. Want it? Are they seeing it and going, we're going to make
oh,
a
I'm sure they are.
Theme park out of it?
Well, they got to make a deal then, haven't they? With the, you know, they got to right. make a deal if we have. That's it. God,
are
that,
the, are the,
boy, no one has thought of that
but,
yet.
But that's, I mean, are the. Actors and creators and the investors, do they see Hamilton as a work of art where they're behind, like this is their project and this is their baby, or are they you know just a small sort of corporation that's looking to
well,
hey, at some point we will sell this to Disney for all of the Star Wars.
That's a great question. You know, I think the difficulty in the live arts is scalability. So you know, if you're let's take say Uber. If you're Uber, you're like, wow, that went really well in New York. We'll let people get Uber in Chicago. And all you do is you hit a button, you hire three techies, and away you go, and you're in another market.
Yeah, right.
And in a movie, you just print a few more movies, or you Netflix, you hit another button. in theater, it's much harder because you've got to build all these companies of Hamilton. Now you can do that, lots of talented people, but it takes time. And the other thing is they've got to be as good as the original. Otherwise, people start going, oh, right. Hamilton.
What are the options? I mean, you can option that to a film and you can do sort of what
right.
they did with
I'm sure they will do that eventually.
Yeah, Into the Woods kind of
right.
stuff, right?
But they don't want to do that right now because they're making so much money.
Right.
They don't want to
right.
give it away
right.
to a
right.
movie.
Absolutely.
They're like, oh, we'll talk about that in 2021. So, but it's not easily scalable, as they say. So the question will be, how many companies can they build? And what fascinates me is, can they all be as good as the original company?
Yeah, it's so
difficult.
Interesting to think about it yes. that way, that they are an independent. They're like an indie rock band.
They're an indie rock band.
Yeah,
they just hit it really big.
Yeah,
they blew up.
Yeah, they're like Chance the Rapper.
That's right.
right.
Who's doing all kinds of
right.
stuff.
But that's sort of the same kind of storyline. For them, you know, going to Chicago, going to D.C., and then everywhere else where they're going to go, at a certain point will – when does the craze die down?
Well, that's the question that nobody knows. How long will it go, and how crazy will it stay?
Are there any other contemporaries? I mean, Book of Mormon did well, but nothing like this, right?
But it's different somehow because Book of Mormon is a sort of a pastiche. I would say it's a satire. It's a fun show. It's a laugh. It's not for kids, which Hamilton, a lot of people take kids to. Book of Mormon is absolutely not for kids. It's not for anybody who can't stand South Park. It is what it is. It's a defined sector of the market, very good for that kind of audience, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you're not going to see Obama hanging out at the Book of Mormon. You're just not, because it doesn't serve his purpose. Oh, Hamilton, everybody's all over Hamilton, right? The president, politicians. It's made politicians, it's made these government treasury wonks look cool.
That's
the thing he's done. He's made them all look cool, and they just can't. They're all dying for tickets. Like in Washington, they're like, "Why is it in Chicago? We're Washington. It's Washington. Why is it not
Alexander
here?
Alexander Hamilton.
This
is our guy.
This is our guy."
That'd be like if there was a Dicka play,
exactly,
and it was like DC got it first. You're like,
exactly.
What is that?
It always, you know, I love it when we get stuff like this. The other one that really annoyed another city was the Gloria Estefan show and the Miami.
Yeah, Miami.
Miami was like, "What's this?
What's this?
What are you doing?"
when they do the story of Styx, the band Styx.
That's right.
And we're like, "How is it not in Chicago?
It'd be in
Des
Moines,
San Antonio to start." All right. Chris Jones,
all
chief
right.
theater critic, and you can check out his column on Hamilton on
Sunday
in the Chicago Tribune.
We appreciate all your clicks.
It's so great to see you. Thanks for being here, man.
Bye-bye.